Good evening. So there are three ways that we can get into trouble. The Buddhists say it a little bit more formally. Three sources of karma: body, speech, and mind. Three sources of karma. Those are the ways we make problems for ourselves. They are actually all the same field. Actually all just three different expressions of the same field of practice, but it's the activities of the body and the mind that throw us off balance. When we encounter a surprising physical or some emotional phenomenon, we can lose our balance in our life. But in our practice, in Zazen practice, there is no motion. No motion, no activity of body and mind, just very still. In Zazen, we are in balance. We're not off balance. And it's in Zazen that the body and the activities of body and mind come into balance. And it's when body and mind are still, then they are also doing Zazen. So our Zazen, our practice, is not just limited to this form that we take when we sit. All of the functions of our body and speech and mind must be always doing Zazen. This is our understanding, and this is our practice. So the Zazen of the body, you know, is this posture with straight back, sitting straight, holding our legs, or sitting in a chair, holding our hands together. And the Zazen of speech are the words we use with each other every day, the mindful words we use with each other every day, the way we greet each other, and the way we chant together. This is the Zazen of speech. And the Zazen of mind appears through the things we see or hear when we pay attention to their arising and their falling. That's the Zazen of mind. All of our ideas and feelings and the way we organize our life and the things we create and the things that we judge and all of our random thoughts, all movements of the mind are Zazen when we pay attention. If we are inattentive and we're casual about our mind activities, then we lose our practice. So when we start, when we first come to practice, when we first hear about Zen practice, when we read about it, when we first come to sit here, we think, oh, this is something special. This is unique. I've never seen this before. This is really something special, and this is, it's very natural to feel this way when we first start. But as we gain some experience with our practice, and sitting becomes more and more familiar to us, we learn to go beyond any idea we have of special. Because if we continue to hold on to some idea, or to think that Zazen is special, we will miss the point of practice. So the point of our practice is to go beyond Zazen as a special activity. To hold Zazen before we have any ideas about it. What is the Zazen before you have an idea about it? This is what we discover. And this is what we are practicing. Of course, sitting this way, allowing our mind to be quiet and attentive, does have a good deal of very practical benefit for us. But that benefit is in what we call the everyday world or the relative world. Maybe reduces our anxieties and maybe provides relief from some kind of discomfort. Just the act of sitting quietly in this posture has some everyday benefit. But the true meaning of Zazen is beyond the relative. It is beyond any idea of whether it is good for us or bad. Zazen is beyond good and bad. Some people, you know, when they first start to practice, they might fall in love with the idea of Zazen or fall in love with the idea of mindfulness. Wow. How cool. This is something special. And some people like to feel associated with the practice. But when we limit our interest in the practice to just feeling good about being associated with it, this is simply the ego at work, you know. If that's the way we come to our practice, we don't really understand what we're doing. And in the words of Dogen, we won't be able to study ourselves. If all we care about is being associated with Zen practice. Without being fully involved and going beyond simple association, we will remain caught in old habits and a narrow view of our life. And we will not be able to recognize our true self. In your entire life, there is only one person you need to meet. That is your true self. No matter where you go, no matter what you do, you must meet your true self. And this person is right here. This person is never absent. If we fail to meet our true self, our life will never be fully satisfied, despite any success we might have. We will always have the feeling that something is missing without understanding what that is. And without meeting our true self, we will never understand how things are really going in our life. So the point of our practice is to meet ourself. And there is a famous poem that reflects this understanding. It was created by Tozan. He was the founder of this school of Zen in China in the 8th century. And he was studying with his teacher, who was Yunyan. And Yunyan gave him something to chew on. He said, "You have to find out who just this one is." After a time, Tozan was ready to leave his teacher and go off on his own. And he was always thinking about just this one is. He couldn't figure it out. What is that? Just this one is. What does that mean? And one day he was crossing a stream and he saw his reflection in the water. And he understood something. He understood the meaning of just this one is, and he wrote a poem. And the poem goes, "Do not seek him anywhere, or he will run away from you. Now that I go on alone, I meet him everywhere. He is even now what I am. I am even now what he is. Only by understanding this way can there be a true union with the self-so, or true self. He is even now what I am. I am even now not what he is." This was his poem. So even though we think that something is important, we always have to be ready to throw it away. This is the principle of our practice: to continually let go of our beliefs and our values and our biases, which is makes up the conditioned way of seeing the world. Those are the things that make us feel important: beliefs and value and our prejudices. That's what makes us feel important. Or that we feel protect us. There was a very famous actor in the Japanese No theater, and this was in the 15th century. His name was Zenchiku, and he was a serious practitioner. He was a serious Zen student, and he practiced Zazen. And to his teacher, he expressed the letting go of ego attachments by saying, "No matter how I look at it, there is nothing blacker than snow." And his master said to him, "If you understand this, all is well." No matter how I look at it, there is nothing blacker than snow. And his teacher approved it. Everyone here in Silicon Valley is intelligent and sophisticated. And these qualities can be very useful in the everyday world. But this Zen Chiku knew how to let go of his knowledge and his usual way of seeing. And he expressed his understanding in a very subtle way and a more satisfying way. So when we study what he said, when we reflect on it and get to its deeper meaning, we realize that when we become free of attachment to any viewpoint, we can see spiritual life according to the truth. Attached to any viewpoint, let it go. So he said, there's nothing blacker than snow. So if he would have gone to his teacher and said, oh, that snow certainly is white, he probably would have gotten a hit. But he said, nothing blacker than snow. Teacher said, if that's the way you understand it, then everything's okay. Let go of all your beliefs, even something as that seems so obvious as that. So as we continually remind ourselves in our practice, our intellectual understanding is insufficient. And if we cling to it, and if we become proud of it, we will develop a very narrow view of life. Whereas what we desire, what we really want, is the widest view. A view of life that has no limits. A view not hindered by prejudices and fixed ideas and stubbornness. So we continually remind ourselves not to let our intellect or our emotions become the foundation of our understanding. We continually learn and we continually experience that wisdom is actually the mind of no clinging. When we perform, you know, some kind of intellectual analysis of something, we actually separate ourselves from that thing. Intellectual study creates subject and object, and that's inevitable. And that's the way of the modern world. That's the way of science, and the way of technology, and the way of progress. And that's very useful in everyday life. But if we want to understand the true nature of things, beyond what we can measure about it, or what we can describe about them, we have to let go of intellectual analysis and not create a distance. We have to return to the mind before our ideas arise. To the mind that doesn't create ideas, and to the ego that does not create conditions for misunderstanding. So the mind of our practice is to accept things as they are and let them come to you spontaneously. So when you go for a walk in the woods, you go for a hike, and you hear a bird, something inside you says, I get it. You cannot analyze what you heard. You simply let it come to you and you say, yes. And that's the mind we develop. That's the mind we express or expose in our practice. So, in one of his lectures, Suzuki Roshi said, you are already perfect. This is a Buddhist understanding. We all have, inherently, we all have perfect character. Inherently. Unfortunately, it becomes clouded over by, becomes clouded and hidden by our desires and our fears and our ambitions and our feelings, the things we call our ego. But fortunately, we have our practice to bring us back to ourself. We have our practice so that we can train our mind to put aside the ego. Training our mind through our practice little by little softens and smooths the ego so that the mind become as flexible as white silk. So in Zazen we are training ourselves. We are actually training ourselves, but we don't think, I'm training myself. We just sit without any such ideas. That is, what that means is our practice, Zen practice, is not something to discuss too much or to think about too much. It is what we show and express in our everyday life. The everyday life where we are always at risk of stumbling and becoming off balance. So to express our inherent perfect character, we watch ourselves, we stay attentive, and we practice continuously. That's all. And in the words of Dogen, the founder of the school, he said, every person is amply endowed with the Dharma, but without practice, it will not be manifested. What he means is because of our ego and because of our grasping, we forget who we are. It's like misplacing your glasses. If you wear glasses and you put them down, and you forget where you put them, you will go into a panic and say, I lost them. And you search all around and you can't see them, which creates even more panic. But when you stop, slow down, let the panic drain away, and look carefully, you will see that you never lost them. Always right here. So our practice is how we slow down our frantic activities and find ourselves just where we have always been. Are there any questions tonight? Yes, please, Vanessa.
Is meeting your true self a relationship that builds up gradually over time, or is it a sudden meeting, and is it unmistakable?
It can go either way, and either way, it's unmistakable. I think the undramatic way of meeting is deeper. Thank you. Yes, Anna.
How do we let go of our preference for what our true self may be? And each time we meet.
If you meet your true self, it means there's no more preference.
I'm thinking more ahead of time.
Ahead of time? There can only be meeting when there is no preference. It's not so easy living in this body and with this mind and trying to comprehend and understand that we are already perfect despite all the limitations and confusions and disappointments that arise. And we read Dogen, and he says, "You're already perfect." And you say, "Well, you're kidding with all this." So one of the important aspects of our practice is trust. Trust that this is so, and that we make our effort to manifest it.